Alrighty, greetings. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. And this is MSO News Sports on this Monday evening. A little bit of a break in the clouds after about 3 weeks of continuous rain here on the North Shore. Well, we've been out for about 3 weeks, so happy to be prepared. Got some interesting conversation, I think, coming up here this evening in sports, and it's going to range from Little League up to the majors in several sports. Tim Kern should be here in a little while. Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. And we will be talking with sports writers tonight for the most part. As, you know, schools, high schools, of course, are on break. They'll be getting back at it in a few weeks, especially the football. And it'll actually all fall sports. We're getting back at it. We'll be getting back at it in a few weeks as we look toward the school year. And, man, my fingers are crossed that this COVID thing slows down. I'm getting a little nervous about it, I gotta tell you. It's very reminiscent of a year and a half ago, and that's not a good thing. So we'll see, but have to follow the advice. Just watching the news tonight, and I guess in Provincetown, they're urging people to wear masks both outside and inside once again. Of course, everybody knows about Los Angeles. You gotta wear the masks now, and COVID cases are rising. The stock market's tanked, so hopefully we can put that stuff aside along, you know, that'll blow away along with the clouds as we try to have some kind of a summer. I just heard, too, on the weather that this is the rainiest July on record. Yay. Just what we need. Anyway, tonight we'll be talking with Nick Kukuru, the sports editor of the Gloucester Times, who is also part of the North Shore Sports Writers podcast that Bill Newell hosts every week along with all the Salem News sports writers. So Nick's going to stop by. I'm going to try to quiz him about Little League Baseball in particular, but maybe his thoughts on everything that's going on. And then we'll check in later on with Gary Larrabee. A couple of stories of interest. Certainly the Open, as it's called, the British Open, was something to behold over the weekend. Some good storylines there. And also Gary has done a fabulous feature on Paul Kelly of Kelly Communications, where he's going into the Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And a tremendous article, of course, Gary, with great research, as always, comes up with details that most of us would not have known about otherwise. And brings up a couple of WESX stories as well. Both Bill Newell and I, of course, were at WESX for many, many years. The old, it's now defunct Radio 1230 in Salem. And then we'll check in with Mike Grenier, who will have some thoughts, I'm sure, on the NBA Finals, which have taken a big turn. Milwaukee with a 3-2 lead now. They play again tomorrow. And get his thoughts on that. Pat Connaughton is playing spectacularly for Milwaukee. And I'll also see where the Celtics are. We haven't talked with Mike we haven't talked with anybody in 3 weeks. So speaking of not talking with anybody in 3 weeks, here he comes. Hey, Coach. Nice haircut.
I get them all cut this time.
I can see that. I can see that. So we're going to be checking in with Nick Kukuru in a minute here, Coach. But I was just introducing the program after 3 weeks. We got Nick Kukuru talking primarily about Little League Baseball, getting us up to speed on that. Gary Larrabee about the Open and about Paul Kelly. Mike Grenier on the Celtics and the NBA playoffs. And I have been ruminating and actually worrying about this rise in COVID that is seemingly taking place all over the place in the new United States. So,
what did I tell you?
It's a pandemic.
Right.
And it still is.
It still is.
So I'm a little nervous about what's going to be coming up over the, you know, in the fall. I'm getting a little nervous.
My trip to Florida may be a thing of the past. So.
Yeah, well, I think everybody, well, I don't know. Let's see.
I'm not going to go to Florida where they have nitwits for politicians. You know.
Well, the thing is, oh, yeah, we do have to get the mic over there, don't we?
Yeah.
The thing that's a little freaky to me is that I guess many of the new cases in Provincetown apparently originated around the 4th of July. No. This is the way we'll do it. With guests, you know, on the island. But they were fully vaccinated. And, you know, they said...
Well, they say they were fully vaccinated.
What?
They say they were
fully
vaccinated.
Well, even so, the idea is, even fully vaccinated doesn't mean you can't contract it. It just means it's not going to be as bad.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, they said it was about 3 weeks ago, they reported that there were 4,000 cases of individuals who have been fully vaccinated who had come down with COVID.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be less severe, or you may not get it, but there's still too many people out there that have not been vaccinated, that you know, still believe in the Trumpian line. It's a hoax. It's not going to get me. Yeah, if everybody else gets it, I don't need it. Well, you know, shame on those people for being so foolish.
Mm.
Because they're putting everybody else in danger. And now there's the new variants that, you know, are just coming and sweeping over the country. And especially in those states where vaccination rates are incredibly low and non-existent. So, you know, this is going to be around the United States. You're going to continually see closures or restrictions as communities and states and then the national government try to get a handle on it again. Because it's going up everywhere. Massachusetts, it's going up. You know, there's more cases every day. There are more numbers of people dying again. And that's what you have to remember. There are still thousands of people every day contracting COVID across the country.
Twice as many today as a week ago in Massachusetts.
You know, and you're gonna and there are still hundreds, if not thousands, of people dying every day in this country from COVID, let alone the other countries in the world. And all you have to do is look at what's happening in Japan. You know, they've had a major outbreak. They still decide to hold the Olympics. And already one of the alternate players on one of the women's team, I think it's the soccer team, has been identified as having come down with COVID. Well, how many people has she exposed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those people are going to have to isolate? It's going to be a mess over there.
I don't understand why they're doing it. I mean, Japan, you know.
Money, because they put up all that money to build the facilities. And they'll take a bath if they don't
right, but,
utilize
but,
them.
Right, but all they can use them, they can't hit spectators. So
no, I know.
So
what's the difference?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so you can't have anybody in there. And it's to me, it was like, put it off for another year. And I don't know, in the Winter Olympics, I don't know, it's 2000, so the Winter Olympics is scheduled for 22. They're scheduled for next winter, I think.
Oh,
right? It's every 2 years you have an Olympics.
You know, again, you have to take a look at it. Is it worth the number of people that could possibly die? We've seen the number of people that have already died worldwide and in this country. Is it really worth it in the short term to cancel it, not hold it,
mm-hmm.
get a grip on it, get 99% of the people vaccinated, and then, you know, and get the programs in place where we can vaccinate the rest of the world.
The astounding thing, well, I agree with that, but the astounding thing, Coach, is that there are people there are people who will not get this. They choose to not get this, and I know someone fairly close to me, chooses not to get it for, to me, what seems like ridiculous reasons. And I don't know. Do you accept facts or you don't accept facts? And the thing of it, and a lot of people now it's your choice. That's fine. But I don't understand how so many just won't do it. And it's like, damn, was it like this with polio? Did people say, I don't want the polio shot?
The people were lined up to get the shot or to drink the vaccine. You know, I mean, when your kids were born, did you deny them? You know, all of the shots, all the immunizations.
Well, there are people doing that.
And what's happening to their kids?
So, I don't know. Well, anyway, tonight we're going to get into some Little League talk, but before we do that, let's get a hold of Nick, and then I'll pick your brain on the Red Sox and how things are looking there and from your advantage point. So why don't we take a break? We'll come back with Nick Kukuru, who is the Boston Times sports editor. This is North Shore Sports Night. We're back after about 3 weeks. Thank you for being with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, welcome back now to Nick Kukro of the Gloucester Daily Times, and he's the sports editor over there. Nick, it's been a while. We did not get a chance to talk with you, but you've been on every single week on the North Shore Sports Writers podcast, the Salem News podcast. So I implore anyone and everyone to check that out because, you know, the high school stories and everything else is on there. But Nick, I kind of want to focus on a couple of things here. And I want to start with Little League. I want your impression of, how Little League has gone this year, maybe overall, in the region and, of course, specifically with Gloucester because, from what I understand, the Gloucester Little League did pretty well in the run-up to Williamsport.
Yeah, they did. I mean, you know, they've been a great job. They kind of led the way last year. They were one of the first ones to, you know, kind of come back and play, and there wasn't a Williamsport last year. But, I mean, it kind of showed that they got, you know, a little bit of that extra, those extra innings in last season because, they played really well. They won their first five games and then, dropped two to Danvers American in the District 15 finals, both one-run games, both you know, games that could have gone either way. So it was, yeah, it was a really good tournament. Danvers American kind of came out of nowhere. They lost their first semifinal game, and then they had to win four elimination games in a row, and they won all of them, last three by a run.
Yeah, you know, Nick, that's what really impressed me as I was following it in the Salem News and in the Gloucester Times. Is when it really came down to crunch time, the deciding games, they were real close, they were low scoring, they were well pitched, you needed a key hit, you know, for Gloucester to lose 1-0, then 3-2.
Yeah.
You know, to go out. That was some outstanding baseball by a group of, young players.
Yeah, it sure was. I mean, you know, and the clinching game, the 1-0 win, I mean, Danvers, Gloucester only struck out, I think, twice all game, and Danvers didn't make an error in the field, and, you know, they threw a couple runners out at the plate. I mean, it was all the defense there. You know, defense can get you into some big time trouble, as, you know, Coach Kearns knows back when he coached my team. And, you know, it didn't get them in trouble. There was great defense all weekend.
Nick, does that have something to do, and I'm grasping at straws here, with the conditions of the fields now? Because I remember way back, you know, when I was in school, even when I played Little League, man, we didn't have the fields like you have right now.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, not as many funny hops, but I don't know. I mean, the kids just seem real solid with the gloves these days. They, mm-hmm. You know, they're not afraid of the ball, and they make all the throws, which is, you know, half the battle, too.
Give me some highlights on maybe some of the kids, maybe some names that, you know, we might see again in the future.
Yeah, so I thought there were four players in that whole section that kind of really stood out. You know, Gloucester, you had Nico Alves and Trey Maroney. They were their two big bats in the middle of the order. They and you know, Alves was their top pitcher as well. He had 11 strikeouts in the district finals. And then, you know, Danvers had Maxwell Parent. He was their starting catcher. I think he had like 6 or 7 home runs in the tournament. He was unbelievable. And Manchester Essex's Connor St. Laurent. It's you know, boys basketball coach, high school basketball coach, Tim St. Laurent's son. And, he was a tall 12-year-old. He hit about 6 or 7 home runs in the tournament, too. Those four players just kind of really stood out, you know, the whole week.
In terms of, finishing up the high school season, you know, you've been running, stars, you know, all stars and things like that. And maybe you could touch on a couple of, your picks having outstanding seasons this year in the various sports, Nick.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of on the girl side, it was, you know, Lilia Thanis from Manchester Essex. She was the Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete of the Year,
mm-hmm.
And she was the Cal Baker Cole Player of the Year, and she was also Cal Baker Player of the Year in field hockey. She's kind of been, you know, stood out about, you know, among the rest as far as athletes are concerned in the area. And we had, you know, Gloucester softball also had a big spring, and that was led by you know, junior pitcher Jenna Hoofnagel and senior shortstop Ella Marshall. They were the top two hitters in their order. They were both good defensively. You know, I mean, they were both all conference players and deservedly so. On the boys' side, you know, Gloucester baseball had some real depth this season. They had, you know, Jack Costanzo and Zach Abbott were their all-conference players. They probably, you know, led the way for them. But, you know, Gloucester was real deep top to bottom, and especially the pitching-wise. I think that's what kind of put them, you know, up ahead in the NEC standings. And Rockport baseball also had an unbelievable season. They made the deepest tournament run in program history to the Division IV North Finals, where they got tripped up by a run by St. Joseph's Prep. But they had a 3-0, three senior pitchers. Every time Rockport has a few senior pitchers, you know they're going to do some damage. And they did. You know, they had Jake Engel, Kyle Beal, and Frew Rowan. And, you know, there's not much difference between any of the three in terms of production. They're different kinds of pitchers, but, you know, their production's pretty similar. They can throw any of them out there against anyone and have a chance.
All right, I have to ask you about Peabody softball and Abby Betancourt and the Lamazzi. Tell me, I mean, they're freshmen. Hello?
Yeah, I know. That's a scary team that looks like, and it looks like they hit as well as they pitch, too. So they're going to be the team, you know, the gold standard of the NEC for a while now. And a group of freshmen to get to the North Finals in Division I is not easy. I think we'll see them continue to knock on the door and be in the mix, you know, for the next 2-3 years after this, too.
What else is going on, Nick? Because, you know, ordinarily we would have been wrapping up the same boat races and the greasy pool. I asked somebody the other day, I forget who it was, but I asked why there could not have been the sporting events. I know Fiesta takes a lot. You have to prepare for Fiesta for a year in Gloucester. I know that. You got to get permits and all this other stuff. But in terms of the sporting events, was it possible? I mean, or was it the same difficulty in that and getting permits and preparing?
I think it was, yeah. Stuff like that. And they didn't want to loan them out. But I think that the Fiesta committee kind of runs, has, you know, owns those boats. I don't know what kind of hoops they would have had to jump for to even just let people use them.
Right. All right. Okay. What else is going on, Nick? I'm getting a little nervous. Tim and I were talking about, you know, the surge right now, but jeepers, you know, high school fall camps are coming up like in about 4 weeks or so.
Yeah, they're right around the corner. It seems like, you know, the spring season just ended. They're about 4 weeks to go, those teams are going to be getting back out there. Well, football at least. I think the other sports might have another week
a little later,
after that. But it's coming up. I mean, this is kind of it. This is, you know, the summer season now. It's not, you know, the Little League's about over. The spring season's long over. So now we're looking forward to, you know, what's coming up in the fall.
All right. What's coming up in the Gloucester Times on the sporting pages?
We got the Bass Rocks Club Championship started over the weekend, so I have an update on that. And I'm also going to have an update. You know, the Gloucester's hosting the Little League State Finals actually next week, so they're getting Boudreaux Field all prepared for that. They got some new bleachers going in there, resawed in the field, so they're putting a ton of work in to get that ready for that big finish to the tournament.
Fantastic. Great checking in with you, Nick, and have a good rest of the summer, but we'll talk to you before it's over.
Sounds good. You too.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Take care, Nick.
All right. That's Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, here on the North Shore Sports Night. And let's kick it upstairs a little bit now. The Red Sox were flying high. They're not flying so high right now.
No. They, you know, where they tortured the Yankees a week and a half ago, they kind of got torched themselves this past weekend, dropping 2 out of 3. Ebb and flow of the season. I'm sure, you know, they didn't have a June swoon, but will they die in July? We don't know. They're running out of time.
I don't think Alex Cora has made many mistakes since I've watched him as a fan. Obviously, not with the expertise you have with your eye. But I thought he made a really big one the other night when he put Arroyo at first base without any experience at all. And then Arroyo tries to make that play, stretches, and practically cuts himself in half.
You know.
Jeez.
When
saw the play?
Oh, yeah. That's the only play of the game that I saw.
That was painful.
I turned it on.
It was painful watching it.
I turned it on, and they were saying, yeah, Arroyo's over at first base. Never played there before. And 11 gone. Oh, that is just, I'm sorry, Major League level, that's a recipe for a disaster. And, I mean, give him kudos. He stretched it out to try to turn that double play. But I saw him stretch, and the first thing I did was,
because
I played first base nearly my entire career of playing baseball up through semi-pro. And I can tell you, you've got to loosen the groin muscles up, because that's the first thing I said to my wife, who was sitting there watching. I go, he just popped a groin muscle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And 10 seconds later, the announcer go, That's a groin muscle.
Oh, yeah.
And those hurt, and those take a while to heal. Because
and then
I popped one in college my sophomore year, and it took me weeks.
Then the Yankee right fielder, I don't know if he pulled a groin. It was the same kind of falling over and stretching, but it looked like he might have had a knee injury, too, because of the way that knee went back. So I didn't get any report on that. But
yeah.
My point was, Corey doesn't make many mistakes, but, man, that was, in my opinion, that was a big one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all this thing about, okay, how can we keep getting all these guys in the lineup? Well, let's throw them places they haven't been before. First base is relatively safe. You can't get hurt playing over there.
First inning, second inning.
Wrong. Okay, so, yeah, you know, I mean, it was a gung-ho play, guys trying to make a play.
Great effort.
But it was, but, I mean, you got to be a little bit smarter, you know? I mean, to split like he did.
But experience, too. Experience
ballerinas don't split like that anymore.
No. And, you know, goalies maybe can. But
goalies warm up.
Hockey goalie. Well, and they've been doing it forever. Yeah. They've got exercises to do that.
Yeah.
All right, so what about the kid they brought up? What's his name? Durant?
First pitch you see, you rip it into right center field for a base hit. You end up coming around to score. What a thrill. You first at bat, you get a hit, and you score a run. Okay, time to retire before anything else goes wrong.
I know, batting 1,000.
You know, and excited for the kid. You know, can he add a little juice to the lineup? You know, Cora said he's in the lineup to stay for the foreseeable future. We'll see, you know, does he get a couple of hits a game? Does he get a hit a game? You know, does he succumb a little bit to the pressure? We don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. I love that the Sox, you know, that the Cora's not afraid to bring him up, stick him in the lineup, and give him a shot. That just shows the manager's confidence in the younger players. So let's take a page out of Terry Francona's book with Dustin Pedroia, and if he slumps a little bit, say, hey, he's going to hit. He's hit everywhere he's been.
Okay.
He's going to play. He'll hit out of it.
And that brings me to the next youngster, because he looks like a smaller version of Aaron Judge. He's got he's infectious when he plays. He's an okay first baseman. But as soon as he gets two strikes, he's out. I watched it, Dalbec. I watch it, and I was watching the game with my daughter last night, and I said, two strikes, he's out. Strikeout. What would your advice be?
Well, he kind of loses patience with once he gets two strikes on him, and he seems to be a sucker for the lower outside pitch. He tends to chase that.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just got to learn to be more selective, you know, that's it, and that's in taking batting practice and having guys throw low outside pitches. Okay, how are you going to change your batting approach to now get that pitch so that the opposition doesn't try to throw that at you again? You know, you throw a good outside breaking ball, you throw a slider off the outside corner of the plate. You know, the best hitters in the game aren't going to get it. All you got to do is look at J.D. Martinez. How many pitches does he miss chasing him low and outside? He likes that pitch, but he's a sucker for it. You know, and how many times have you seen him going down on strikes looking to get that pitch? So it's training your eye. It's, you know, I coach the kids to let it travel and then let it ride. And that's watching the pitch come in so that your eyes can adjust your hands to where the pitch is and the speed of the pitch. And that takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of batting practice. It takes a lot of swings.
And speaking of pitching, we read all kinds of stories during the All-Star break. Oh, never mind that. Forget about that. Ohtani. Tell me about Ohtani.
He's a piece of work. I mean, how do you?
Isn't it fun to watch him?
How do you get him out? I mean, you know, he the way he goes after the ball and he just drives it. He puts this so much power in his swing, and it doesn't look like he's really swinging all that hard, but he's driving the ball. And the hell with that, he got $150,000 for being in the home run hitting contest, and he gave it to the members of the Yankees office and the training staff.
Angels.
Yep. The Angels. He gave it away.
Yep.
He said, "No, I don't want this." And the guy knows how much he's making, but here are these people in the trenches not making a whole lot of money. And he went, "Here, Divide it up.
And he wrote out checks. Yep. Amazing.
What an outstanding thing to teach the rest of your American teammates about sharing, about caring, about recognizing the others around you that make your job so bloody easy.
And what about on the mound every fifth, sixth, seventh day, however long he's out there?
He's a freak of nature. We haven't seen somebody doing this since back in the 60s. Someone who could hit and pitch and play the field. It's like, you got to be kidding me.
Right.
That's the way he was brought up in Japan. And when he came here, he said, I'm going to continue to do both.
It looks so effortless.
And to the Angels, they went, yeah, it might not be a bad idea. Let's try this.
We can do that.
They looked at it, I think, as a marketing ploy more than anything else.
Well, it's fun to watch him.
And then,
sure.
And then he just kept hitting. It's like old-time baseball.
Yeah.
Pitcher now hitting the pitcher. It's like, wait, we haven't heard that in years.
Who was it? Was it Earl Wilson who pinch hit one time for some? I think it was Earl Wilson.
Earl Wilson pinch hit.
Home run.
Dave DeBuscher played baseball and mm-hmm. basketball.
Mm-hmm. Frank Sullivan did. Gene Conley.
Gene Conley.
Yep.
So the numbers that
but
have
they
actually
didn't play, they didn't
deaded.
Pitch and
crush
play a regular
lead the league in home runs at the
right.
All-Star break.
That's right.
It's like, you gotta be kidding me. And again, it's so effortless.
Yeah.
So which tells you, one, he has a great eye. He has a solid swing where he's just driving right, throughout your attack angles and all this. He has got his swing down to where he has just a slight uppercut, and he's making solid contact so that he's using the power, the speed of the pitch, to drive the ball. So he doesn't have to crush it. He's just going to come through with a nice, solid, strong swing, and the ball reacts off the bat.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love watching him, man, I'll tell you. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Gary Larrabee, who was a golf writer and sports historian as well. Couple of stories in both of those venues. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. And, Gary, I don't know where you want to start, but I will say this. Two topics I hope we can talk about are both the Open and about Paul Kelly.
Yes, and we'll talk a little bit about the Massachusetts Amateur as well, but I think we should start with another terrific tournament from the four majors we watched this year. Of course, the last one came yesterday when Colin Morikawa from California won his second major in his very first attempt. He won the PGA, last year for the very first time he made it. That made it appearance in that tournament. Now he's won the British Open for the first time in his very first attempt. No golfer has ever accomplished such a feat. Isn't that amazing, Tim?
It totally is. And I was listening to TuneIn Radio, the sports show out of Great Britain, and they were just oozing platitudes about Morikawa and his composure. His age, 24 years old. He's already got two majors in his first two attempts. But his whole demeanor on the course. He's not a big excitable guy. He just goes out there and he just gets it done. And the way that these British sports analysts were talking about him and oddly talking about the number of dominant golfers that are now coming out of American colleges as opposed to the past?
Well, yes, Matthew Wolf just came out the same time that Morikawa has. He has not won any majors. He's won a couple of tour events, but this kid Morikawa has it all. He's lean. He's got a great personality, a great face for the game. I'm sure you remember I made those same remarks after he won the PGA last year out in San Francisco. And we almost saw Jordan Spieth win his, I think, fourth or fifth major, but he didn't quite have it. And Morikawa is a great British Open champion. Tiger couldn't play again. McIlroy slipped again. Koepka slipped again. But I think we may have our next superstar.
Well, you know, that's what they were talking about, Gary. You know, he's won these two big tournaments. And, you know, we had the same kind of reaction after Spieth and all these other younger guys when they first broke out. And they won two or three tournaments there, their first seasons. And, oh, and we all said, okay, they're the next big thing, they're the next big thing, they're the next big thing. And while they're still on the scene, they don't appear to be the dominant players that I think so many people expected them to be. And, you know, and the guys referenced, you know, back in the 60s, you had Arnie, you had Jack, you had Trevino, you had Palmer, and you had like your big four hitters that you know were probably going to be playing for on a Sunday afternoon. But nowadays, these guys have like really been like a Roman candle early, and then now they're sputtering.
Well, we've seen how difficult it is to maintain such a high level of play over a course of several years. Spieth lost his game for like 18 months. Now he's back, very much in contention in majors. But we've got Morikawa. We have Bryson DeChambeau right now probably as the two top newcomers to that plateau of top players. And Justin Thomas may get there someday. Ricky Fowler will never get there. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it evolves. We're going to have finished with the four majors. We have the, FedEx Cup playoffs and the PGA Tour coming up in late August. The Ryder Cup after that at Hazeltine out in Minnesota. And we just have to wait and see, Tim, how all these players evolve. But we've learned again from this past weekend how hard it is to pull it off. And here's Morikawa with two. DeChambeau has one. But we're expecting a lot more good things. So it's wonderful fascination, wonderful suspense. And let's see who takes charge, if anybody does, in the playoffs coming up after the Olympics.
Yeah. Now, Gary, why did they change the name from the British Open to just the Open?
It's called the Open Championship, and that's the way they want to separate themselves from the U.S. Open. They were first, and their name is, the name of the tournament is the Open Championship.
Yep.
Let them do it. They had golf before we did. No big deal.
Hey, final question on the Open, Gary. The thing about DeChambeau on that first day and the driver and all that stuff, did the media kind of overblow that? I mean, he was frustrated.
Well, he's one of the big stories out there. Every week he plays, and the driver was obviously the story of his week. It didn't quite deliver for him, and we'll see where it takes him from here. But we have a lot to look forward to with another 3-4 weeks of Ryder Cup points, and then we get the Ryder Cup team, and should be fun. You know, that's not coming up till September, like I said before, but the playoffs are 3 weeks coming up in the middle of August, and that's the next big event.
Yeah, you know, his saying that his driver sucked kind of reminds you, a baseball player makes an error, what's the first thing he does? Looks in his glove.
Yeah, he looks in the glove. It's a glove.
You know,
it's
like, how dare you fail me?
What's up locally, Gare?
We had the mass amateur last week, guys, the 113th mass amateur at Raber. We had a pretty good representation from the North Shore. You may have noticed that he had 36-hole qualifying the first 2 days. George Gelotis from Peabody and Tedesco was 7-under par after 10 holes in his first round of two. Wow. He staggered a bit, shot 68, shot 79 the second day for a 147, so it still made the round of 32 for match play in a playoff. That was the big story of the first day. The second day, Chris Francoeur from Amesbury, St. John's Prep, moving on to play 1 year at Louisville before he'll probably turn pro. There's also in the mix, as well as Christian Emmerich from Kernwood. They all made match play, as did Frank Viener from Ferncroft. But only Francoeur, for the second year in a row, made a serious run at the title. He lost in the semifinals to the eventual winner, Michael Thorpe Johnson from Wellesley, who, of course, was a former USGA junior champion. He rubbed out big time Matt Parziali from Stony Lee in the finals, who was also a former USGA mid-amateur champion and a former mass amateur champion. He beat him 8-6. So the top dog, obviously, in the Massachusetts amateur scene is Michael Thorpe Johnson. And, of course, he goes back to Stanford for his second year next month. And he's the player to watch from Massachusetts, I think, guys, to be the next big thing and hopefully make it on the tour. But that's still a long ways off. So that was the mass amateur. Rob Oppenheim made the cut for the second week in a row in the PGA Tour. He did play in the Open Championship. He was playing at the Barbasol Championship down in Kentucky, like the second level tour tournament. He didn't play well on the weekend, but he's playing again this week. Another big event coming up this week. We'll see if he can make some serious money, but right now he's in serious straits to lose his card, but we'll see how that evolves. And of course, two big events this week, guys. We've got the New England Amateur starting tomorrow out down in Connecticut, where our favorite player is James Turner, who won the 2016 New England Amateur with a record 7 under par 273. We've got the New England PGA Seniors Championship coming up Tuesday, Wednesday at Woodstock up in Vermont. We could have local winners in both of those tournaments, but it's a wait and see to find out.
Wow, great coverage. Well, if that's it for the local stuff, and I'm not trying to cut you short, but I have to mention the Paul Kelly story. I believe I read it online at the Gloucester Times. Paul Kelly being inducted to the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And what a story you did on him, Gary. Just an amazing job from your point of view. In telling us so much information and getting those names out there, especially Spike Brown, WESX, and all that stuff. Man, great job.
Well, thanks. It's a great story. Paul turns 90, I believe, later this week. He should have been inducted long before now because he was really the pioneer, the trailblazer in the creation of sports talk in Boston. Granted, Guy Manila was the first who did it at WBZ.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a name. For
yeah,
that.
Guy Manila. Oh, Guy? 354-5678. Guy?
Right. Paul took radio sports talk to a new level, of course, at WIT as he hired Mike Lynch. He hired Glenn Ordway. And he did an awful lot in many different capacities to promote college and professional sports on the airwaves for almost 50 years. He formed his own company, Kelly Communications. So it's long overdue, but we're thrilled for him. And the induction, I believe, is in September at the Quincy Marriott. And we couldn't be prouder of Paul Kelly Sr.
I got to find that and connect to it, the article, because it's tremendous. Great depth and great storytelling in the Salem News and the Gloucester Times, the story on Paul Kelly. And Bill, of course, our partner Bill Newell worked for Kelly Communications for quite a while. So
that's right. Paul gave a lot of people the opportunity to make it in the business, and now we have two sports talk stations 24/7 in Boston. And one of the big reasons for all of that is the fact that Paul Kelly got the ball rolling and brought some great personalities at WITS. That's 1510, the former WMEX, where Woo Woo Ginsburg made a lot of...
Yep. Arnie Ginsburg.
Friends and money. Anyways, we're very happy for Paul and long overdue.
Absolutely. All right, Gary, so do we have a feature that you can tease for this week or what?
Well, we're on hold a little bit, guys, but
okay.
We're going to be talking. We're going to be looking forward to actually looking back to 20 years ago when we had the most important sports event in the history of the North Shore at Salem Country Club, the 2001 U.S. Senior Open. We're going to get our memory lane with Ollie Cook from Beverly Farms, who was the general chairman of that event, as well as two other USGA championships at Salem. And hard to believe it's been 20 years since we had Palmer player Nicholas Watson.
Wow.
competing at Salem Country Club.
I'm glad you keep that stuff alive, because when I was a kid, I know Kearns was a reader too. I remember being 10, 11, 12 years old and reading Sports Illustrated or Sport Magazine or the Sporting News and reading about guys like Rabbit Marinville and Dizzy and Daffy Dean. And it just fleshes out the whole thing. And here you are doing this on a local level. And so many sports right now just makes the entire North Shore like a backyard. So keep it going, Gary. Appreciate it.
We'll make every effort to do just that. Great talking with you guys.
Talk to you later, Gary.
See you, Gary.
You guys. Stay well.
Yep.
Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. But, you know, it's reading this stuff. It's like I didn't know half this stuff about Paul Kelly, and I had worked not in his business, but with him through other guys and so on. I didn't know that stuff.
Yeah. Well, my buddy and I were at the 2001 Senior Open.
Arnold, Nicholas, are you kidding me?
And we were at, I think it was on the fourth fairway. We found a spot just off the fairway, and it was right across the landing zone for their drives. All landed in front of us. And it was great. We just sat there all day long. Everybody came to us.
Because they all
hit within like 5 or 10 yards of where we were sitting.
Perfect.
Oh, it was absolutely great. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Up next, we'll talk with Mike Grenier, talk a little basketball, and maybe just tie up some loose ends here. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And let's see here. Yeah, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with Mike.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Yes, we do. And now Mike Grenier is joining us, sports writer, famous sports writer here on the North Shore. Mike, how are you?
Good, good. I couldn't help but overhear our good friend and colleague, Gary Larrabee, just now, talking about Woo Woo Ginsburg, the DJ. I mean, I remember him, but I thought Gary was more into, like, Lawrence Welk and Guy Lombardo. I hope he's listening to this.
Guy Lombardo.
Woo Woo's Night Train.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Oh, my. Mitch Miller, you know.
Radio, boy, we used to listen to that as grammar school. That's how we discovered the Beatles, you know?
Hey, yeah. You know, I went to a fundraiser one time at the O'Malley Rink after it was built, and Arnie Woo Woo Ginsburg, he was the DJ that night, and was it fun? You know,
dancing and
entertaining people. He was great.
One of his sponsors was the Adventure Car Hop over in Revere at the traffic circle.
Yep.
Right. And you remember, I think he was one of the many local DJs, Boston, who would play Freddie Boom Boom Cannon. As I remember, Boom Boom Cannon was from Revere, I believe, right?
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
I think so. So he was promoting a local artist, and they played that song every 7 minutes on AM radio, you know?
Yeah, because that's what people don't know, Mike, is that way back in the day, MEX was at 1510, and RKO was at 680, and those are the only rock and roll stations.
No, BZ was in the middle.
No, BZ was not playing rock and roll.
Yeah, they were. Bruce Bradley, Dick Summer, oh yeah, absolutely. Who was the guy, Dick, I can't remember his name, but Bruce Bradley.
Well, not when I came of age, maybe back in the Stone Age when they first came on.
Well, when we're talking about late 60s, early 70s, they played rock and roll, and RKO FM. was their other side.
Tim, we'll have to take his word for it.
Don't mess with me.
I know, really, because I don't remember that.
Don't mess with me with radio boys. No. And I got to ask you, Mike. Speaking about that, I was just applauding what Gary does in terms of delving into sports history here locally. Do you remember when you were a kid? Did you read sports? Because I mean, as a sports writer, you must have that desire. I know Tim and I have talked about all the magazines we used to read, the sport magazines.
Right. I heard you talking about Sport magazine. That was big. Sporting News was big for the baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the stats and everything
else. Yeah.
It wasn't like these days where you could just turn on your computer and get instant stats and vintage stats. I mean, you waited for Sporting News for a week or two
or
a month.
Weekly.
Or even a month before you can get the stats, you know? And that was a different way of accumulating knowledge and information. That's for sure, guys, you know?
And Ted Williams, when he brought his book out, what's it called? The History of... Ted Williams on Hitting or something like that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All those biographies. Well, anyway, let's get down to business. We got to start, obviously, with the Bucks.
Oh,
the Bucks start here.
What a comeback. Really, when they were down 2-0 to the Phoenix Suns, who really have been playing fantastic at that point, not just postseason but regular season, I said to my wife, there's no way the Bucks can beat them 4 out of 5. Okay, I just kind of felt... the Bucks had to take one of those first two games in Phoenix. And sure enough, the Bucks win 2 at home. They protect home court. And then obviously they always call Game 5 pivotal. They go out to Phoenix and win a very close game. And at the very end of the game, it was a Jrue Holiday defensive play, taking the ball away from the kid who scored 70 against the Celtics, right? And passes to Giannis for the dunk that puts them up 3 with like 13 seconds left. Naturally, Giannis missed the free throw because he misses approximately 45% of his free throws, you know. So that made it interesting. It was a one-possession game. But the Bucks have done an incredible job of climbing back into the series. And now, obviously, bingo, advantage Bucks because they're at home tomorrow night.
You know, Mike, we've talked about... Pat Connaughton's contribution to the Bucks' success in the not only the season but the postseason as well, but just his ability. People who have been watching this series and watching him run the floor, move on the floor, sift through picks, cover guys that are 5-6 inches taller than he is,
right?
With
right.
just classic fundamental. Straight up, great footwork, you know, and giving himself an advantage. But there was, in that game five, there was one point, it was in the last couple of minutes, Milwaukee's in the offensive zone, and I don't know who took the shot, but Connaughton slid inside his man, went up, got the rebound, didn't get the assist on the ensuing bucket, but made the pass out that led to the pass that scored the basket.
Right.
And I'm like, here he is, 6'4", and one of the sports writer on Twitter noticed, just the contributions that Pat has been making. His defense has been so sound, scoring when he's had the opportunity, that deep corner three that he threw down late in the game. I think it was game four, but I mean, I saw that rebound and I go, wow, it was just so classic. He slid inside his man, kind of just nudged him out of position, went up, two-hand rebound, came back down, kicked it out, then it was passed to the scorer. And I'm like, that's it. And that was a big bucket because it put him up like either 3 or 5. And I'm like, and not a whole lot of people noticed it, I'm sure.
Well, you know what? I mean, let's look at what he's done right now in the NBA Finals. Here's a guy coming off the bench. He's shooting 53% from the floor, 50% on threes.
Wow.
Okay, and he's percentage-wise, the only guy who's shooting better on the Bucks is Giannis, who's a seven-footer almost, basically a seven-footer, who gets a lot of dunks. Okay, so that shows you how effective he's been, and it's because he's so fundamentally sound, Tim. You point out some of these things that don't appear on the stat sheet that he does, and he gets into position. Matter of fact, Mike Budenholzer, the coach, was talking about that one of the post-game press conferences, how Connaughton, the way he uses space, the way he spaces out on the floor, the way he makes things easier for teammates, the way he battles for rebounds, which is an essential, certainly part of the game in these finals, He's been phenomenal, and he's averaging 11 points and like 5 or 6 rebounds a game. In the last two games, 11 points, 9 rebounds, and a game 4 win, and two nights ago, 14
right.
points,
yep.
4 for 6 shooting. He's just been tremendous. And, you know, he texted me today. Hudson texted me today, and I reminded him about, I said, wouldn't it be unbelievable if 10 years after winning the state championship at St. John's Prep, you could finish this off at home in Milwaukee for, as we know now, 50 years since the Milwaukee Bucks have won a title. And he texted me back, and he said, that would be fitting. Not done yet, though, Mike, he said to me. Not done yet. And he just keeps his eyes on the prize. He never gets caught up in let's say, the post game. He's always level-headed. And how about the Tim, I'd love to get your take on this. And Rick, the, quote, controversy he supposedly caused nationwide because he called Giannis's block on Ayton in Game 4 the best block in the history of the playoffs, better than LeBron's block, okay? But he did qualify that by saying, obviously, I'm biased. I play for the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But all this stuff now, LeBron was supposed LeBron hasn't, give him credit, he's not been upset, he hasn't said anything, but all these national people saying, oh, did he shade LeBron? I mean, was that a criticism of LeBron and his block a few years ago? No, he was just commenting on his teammates, his teammate Giannis making the block of the game and certainly one of the best blocks in the history of the playoffs to save that game four, you know? So I don't understand what all this, but typical content, he kind of deflected a couple nights ago on national TV. He said, I'm going to call it a tie and let the rest of you guys discuss it, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's such foolishness, you know. I have the picture from the Boston Globe on the record, American, I can't recall which it is, of Bill Russell blocking a Will Chamberlain dunk attempt.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, when they can do that, I'll call it the greatest. But I have that other picture that proves otherwise.
Right, right. Well, of course, Connaughton's only 28 years old. He would not have seen Bill Russell play like, you know, like we did.
I know.
Yeah, well, part of the problem.
Obviously, you know, he was just enthused about his team,
yeah.
Giannis. And it was a legitimately game-saving play. And, you know, it propelled the Bucks into a Game 5, which they won in Phoenix. But, you know, the bottom line is this guy has been a major contributor off the bench. And he's getting starters minutes. He's playing 32,
yeah.
33. 34 minutes a game. I know for a fact his career high in the playoffs is 34 minutes. But he's had two or three 33-minute games already in a 32-minute game. And, you know, Mike Budenholzer has been putting him in with like 7 or 8 minutes left in the first quarter. And that shows you how much trust the coaching staff has in Connaughton's ability to get the job done on the biggest stage of all.
Well, you know, it shows the coach's realization that I need this kid out there. I need this kid to calm things down. You know, that's what his presence brings out there. And that, you know, whip the ball around. Like that deep three that he threw in. That was a cross-court pass from Giannis. It was a friggin' bullet. I'm thinking, how the hell did he hold on to that thing? And he just squares up and throws down a three. And it's like, going like, okay, nothing to it.
Right, right. Now, he's been really clutch. And he's obviously been even better in the first 5 games of the finals than he was in earlier series. He's played in 22 playoff games now, and overall he's shooting 47% through the 22 games and 40% from three-point land. Those are terrific figures, but obviously in the finals he's ramped it up, like I mentioned, 52.8% overall shooting and 50% even on three-point shooting in the finals. And the national media is starting to recognize how big a contribution he's making for this team. And,
wow, those are like LeBron numbers, Mike.
Yeah, sure, exactly. You know, someone actually asked me a couple of days ago, Tim, and this is an interesting question. Have there ever been any Massachusetts players, guys who played high school ball in Massachusetts that have won NBA titles? And, you know, we researched it, and there really haven't been many. The one guy that I could come up with, and again, he's a local guy, Rick Weitzman.
Yeah.
Oh, from Peabody.
Peabody High School.
Yeah.
Went to Brookline High School. And he played 1 year with the Celtics with Bill Russell in 1966 when they won it all. But he was like a role player who really didn't get nearly as much playing time, obviously, as Connaughton has gotten. And Connaughton's been in the league now for 6 years. But Weitzman, you know, was a legitimate part of that championship team in 66. And he was a high school kid in Massachusetts, Brookline High, had a great career there. Then he went to Northeastern University. So there really have not been many Massachusetts kids who have have been in the NBA Finals, and I think Connaughton, would join Weitzman perhaps as the only players who played in high school ball in Massachusetts to win an NBA title, and so it's something. It's just an added dimension to what he's given these Milwaukee Bucks.
All right, I got to ask you, where'd Cousy play high school basketball?
Cousy was a New York City kid.
Ah, okay, yep.
He grew up in New York City, and you might recall, I think he grew up in I think he only spoke French in his early years. And he was a New York City kid, and of course Tommy Heinsohn was a New Jersey guy. So they, even though they established roots, like Cousy had been a long time Worcester resident, and of course Heinsohn went to Holy Cross as well, like Cousy.
Mm-hmm.
But they were not Massachusetts high school.
Gotcha.
Players.
All right. Good job.
So we mispronounced Bob's last name all these years. It's Bob Cousy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Cousy.
Yeah. And good old Cousy, he's still hanging around. And,
Cousy.
God bless him.
Sharp minded at like age 91 or 92. I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the thing is, you mentioned the thing about LeBron and the discussion, and it sometimes my wife and I will go to Sylvan Street Grill, tremendous sports tavern, and they've got all these screens up there. And I sit there, and my jaw kind of drops to think that these are 24-hour sports stations. There's like 6, 7, 8, 9 of them. And then we have 2 24-hour sports stations in Boston. So you can't possibly cover sports in detail in terms of, let me rephrase that. You can't take sporting events and true stories about that, facts, and expand that to 24 hours. You got to make stuff up. That's what they do.
Yeah, and they do, and that's what causes the controversy and the baloney that we hear, that we didn't hear 30, 40, 50 years ago, I guess, and that's why there's so many, they call the haters, and, the LeBron haters, and there's the haters of this guy and that guy, and a lot of times the athlete's just caught in the middle, they're just playing the game.
Yeah.
Drew Holiday had a terrible game 4 for the Milwaukee Bucks, the point guard. And he was criticized as if he was the worst player on earth. So what does he do? He bounces back in game 5. He gets like 27 points and 13 assists, and he makes the steal off the Phoenix kid in the final seconds. And now he's the greatest player on earth. So it just it's the coverage is so micromanaged.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not really a good thing.
Everything's
really
under the microscope. Hey, listen, a couple of minutes left here. Any Celtic news?
Not really. Obviously, they're going to have to get... Well, yeah, how about this? Let's talk about Jason Tatum even for a minute. His knee's a little sore. He's on the Olympic team. How about the U.S. Olympic team losing their first 2 games to Australia and Nigeria?
Mm-hmm.
And Tatum, puts out that whole thing again about not getting the $33 million bonus because he wasn't ranked in the top 15 players in the NBA, first, second, or third All-NBA team. And it kind of comes off as a really selfish type of attitude because, obviously, when a contract kicks in, he's going to make like $175 million. So does he really need to quibble about the $33
million? That's what they do now, Mike. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that the head coach, and I think he's going to have to curb that kind of individual talk, whether it's Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart. They need to start from scratch here and build a team, because when you look at it, guys, right, they're not nearly as good as the Atlanta Hawks, okay, who the Bucks. They're not nearly as good as the Philadelphia 76ers. These are teams that went fairly deep into the playoffs, and the Celtics are nowhere near those teams. So they really have a lot of a team building to do, and you want to do it as a team and not this individual stuff that we've been hearing. It just offends me when I hear that stuff.
Well, like you said, he's not making enough money as it is, and he's got now these outside endorsements that he's doing, just shut up and play the game.
Money talks. Money talks.
I mean, and the Celtics have a long... They have a credibility factor right now. They've just really gone downhill, and they need to build up a team that can be competitive in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they reacquired Al Horford, made it look like they were getting a guy in his prime. He's not in his prime. He's at the end of his days. And so they need to get some players who are going to be start building this winning. They were 37-40 this past season. That's the black and white of it. Mm-hmm. Those are the numbers. They aren't good numbers. So they're not an elite team. They're not even a good team right now. And that's really what it comes down to at this point.
You know, Bill Parcells said it. You are what you are. You know, your record.
What's your record? Yep.
Just what your record. Your record indicates just what you are as a team. And you know, like I said, this is a team that's got to reestablish itself. But can they do it with simply Danny leaving and then Stevens going from the bench into Danny's office? Is that going to be any kind of a real difference maker?
Well, you know what, Tim? That remains to be seen, because he has no track record as a guy who can procure talent and to recognize talent and to make trades. He's not at Danny Ainge's level, that's for sure. He has completely inexperienced guy, as is the head coach. Completely inexperienced as a head coach in the NBA. So there are a lot of major question marks when the Celtics went to training camp this fall.
Oh, man, I was so excited for this too, Mike, but you put it in perspective. Thanks.
Well, you know, Mike, I don't want to sound like Debbie Downer.
Nothing like a dose of reality to bring it back.
Geez. It is. They need to... You know, I think there are a couple of people who pointed out. I think Dan Shaughnessy of the Globe, who I know very well, often says the Celtics have not been a likable team the past season, and they think they're better than they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And really, they have two good cornerstones there, Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But when you look at what they've done, maybe they haven't had enough help, but they have not reached the NBA Finals, and now they've backtracked a bit. So they need to build some better talent around those two cornerstones and to get back into a position where they can compete with the best teams in the NBA.
All right, Mike, next Monday night we'll talk about the NBA champs.
That sounds great, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate your being on, and we'll talk to you later. Have a great week.
You too.
Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Mike Renier, who is a sports writer extraordinaire for many, many, many years, another one who's with encyclopedic knowledge of not only the pros but also local stuff as well. Final thoughts here, Coach?
Best wishes to Pat Connaughton and the Milwaukee Bucks tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
When they go for the league title, hopefully he'll have a solid game as he has provided all season long, and they bring it home. And good luck to all the Olympians, and please stay healthy.
Oh God, yes. All right, great being with you this evening on this Monday night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. This is North Shore Sports Night, and this has been... Well, actually, it's been North Shore Sports Night. This is msonewsports.com, and our email address is msonewsports@gmail.com. That's it. Thank you very much. Good night. Stay safe. Be well. Bye-bye.